Hello.
Hello. Oh, I guess it is number three. Yeah, this is Ren, and we're on the air. I'm just setting up the second microphone here because we have a guest today on Mideast Madness. This is Mideast Madness. I'm Ren Tawil. We are streaming live at freakradio.org. And this is Mideast Madness, the show that used to be called Don't Beat Me Up, as though it really matters to anyone who probably hasn't been listening anyway. Make no mistake, this is now Mideast Madness. And we let me put a couple of things out to you right away to keep free radio alive and broadcasting and live on the net. Please send your donations. Any amount will be dearly appreciated. Send a contribution to FRSC, which stands for Free Radio Santa Cruz, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, USA 95061. Please support your free radio. Let me put out the phone numbers, which we probably will get to towards sometime in the second half of the show. Area code 831 here in Santa Cruz County, California, USA, 427-3772. That's 427-3772. The second line is AC 831-469-3119, 469-3119. Please hold off on the calls, though, until I say go, okay? We have our first ever guest on Mideast Madness. I want to introduce everyone to Robert. And we're just going to call him Robert. He has his good reasons for not revealing anything else about his name. Robert, let's see if your microphone works there.
Testing. Hi, this is Robert. Is it working? I guess so.
Keep talking continuously.
Okay. Happy to be here. I guess I'll start with the topic. For some time, I've been working on a summary of what I consider to be an extremely important historical book, written or published, written in the early 2000s. We're messing with the mic here for a second here.
Yes.
These
Just play.
low-budget shows
Just
here.
Hit an inch or two. Get your mouth.
Okay. The book is called The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, published in 2006. Gee, I forgot to bring the book with me. I would give you the publisher, but I didn't bring it. I just brought my notes. Written by Ilan Pappe, P-A-P-P-E, which is a German name. Ilan, of course, is actually a Hebrew name. He is an Israeli citizen. Of course, he's Jewish. He was a professor at the University of Tel Aviv, and being a native Israeli and a scholar, I'd say he's in his mid-50s now, or probably possibly late-50s. Being an Israeli and a professor, I'm not sure I can say tenured, because I'll talk to you in a moment about what happened after the book was published. But so again, the title, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, he went into the archives, many different archives, but the main source would have been the Central Zionist Archives, the Haganah Archives, which are archives of the predecessor of the Israeli Defense Forces. The Haganah was the main Zionist militia. He also had access to various diaries, including Yosef White, who was an Israeli and a Zionist and part of the group that planned the expulsion of the Palestinians for actually decades. Also used were Red Cross and UN archives, and then other sources such as Jewish authors like Benny Morris and Avi Schleim, S-H-L-E-I-M, maybe S-C-H-L, I'm not sure. Avi Schleim, I believe, lives in England, and I'm not sure where Benny Morris lives now. So when I mentioned earlier the fact that Papay was a what I thought to be a tenured professor, he was, after the publication of this book, he was essentially ostracized, and he left the country of Israel and is now a professor at the University of Exeter in England. I believe he's at the Cornwall campus in Wales. So that that gives you a kind of a basic idea.
And I can see here, you mentioned that you forgot to bring the book. It's my information here says, first published by One World Publications Limited, October 2006. Paperback edition first published 2007. And the ebook is published by One World Publications. So we got One World Publications.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Ren. I probably would be good to mention that I'm on the Palestine-Israel Action Committee at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. And my own background in this, I suppose, since I'm as old as the state of Israel, that is, Israel was officially founded in May of 1948, and being of that age, I grew up with the general mindset, I believe, of most people in the United States, and that was, you know, some kind of a war occurred, and Israel won the war, and you know, the Palestinians were relegated to refugee camps, and you know, a few on the West Bank, and then there's a diaspora, you know, people in Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, all over the Middle East, and of course, Palestinian Americans, and Palestinians in Europe, all over the place. And I, being an inquisitive person, I read things beyond the mainstream press. I always wondered, gee, where did all those refugees come from? Maybe Ren knows the number of Palestinian refugees. He's shaking his head. You know, there are more than a million Palestinian refugees.
I believe it was some 700,000 refugees were generated by what happened in May of 1948.
And actually, Papay, I do have a number here in my notes, and I want to be accurate here. He says 800,000 were uprooted from 531 villages, and those villages were destroyed. Most of them were leveled. And then there were also 11 urban neighborhoods that were emptied of their inhabitants. And of course, should mention that not all Palestinians left, because I believe about 20% of the Israeli population consists of Palestinians. And of course, they are citizens, but they're not considered nationals. So there's basically a two-tiered situation in Israel, Palestinians being relegated to second-class citizenship, which I guess you could say was similar to what was the case in the United States prior to the Civil Rights Act, when you had separate but equal and all of that. You had, white-only water fountains and restaurants and lunch counters and buses and the whole thing. So we digress here, but Pape wrote the book. I think if I wrote, let me quote from him. He says, "This book was written with a deep conviction that the ethnic cleansing of Palestine must become rooted in our memory and consciousness as a crime against humanity." And he goes on to say, that's a quote, and he goes on to say how false and absurd was the Israeli claim that the Palestinians left of their own accord, which is, you know, there's a mindset, not just in the United States, but in many places, and I think you probably find people everywhere who simply look at this, what I said before, that there was some moral war in 1948 that wiped out the Palestinians, when in fact Pape goes on, goes in this book, makes the case that it was an expulsion. He says he wants to make the case for the paradigm of ethnic cleansing and use it to replace the paradigm of war as the basis for scholarly research and public debate. And of course, you know, his goal, I think, and my goal, I think, in bringing the truth out and showing that there are two sides to the story, is that, you know, as we go on into the future and continue whatever negotiations there might be, it seems like they're always stalled, but that knowing this history, admitting it, just as we in the United States need to own up to the fact that we essentially ethnically cleansed the Native Americans from their homes in the 19th century mostly, and before, but we need to own up to it, and I think, you know, the idea that there needs to be some justice here, and I think the justice would be either the two-state solution with the Palestinians getting a chance at a viable state, not an apartheid state, which West Bank especially is now, or the other, which is the one-state solution that people talk about and was considered in the 40s, when the UN was talking about partitioning, which eventually happened, so the country was partitioned. So that's, I think, the background. Ren, do you have any?
Thanks, Robert, for the summary. Did you? I'm sorry, I was fiddling with the pewter here, and I'm not absolutely sure. Did you give any background to your personal experience?
Well, actually, I started to. I touched on it. I started out by talking about how...
Since we're not using your last name, I'd like to qualify you a little more clearly, let everyone know.
Well, I did mention that I was on the PIAC, the Palestine-Israel Committee, and Palestine-Israel Action Committee, PIAC, the Resource Center for Nonviolence, where I also volunteer once a week. I'm there, and
your work history, what kind of stuff have you done?
I spent about 35 years mostly as a technical and academic editor, and in that 35 years I spent about 4 years as a part-time instructor at various community colleges in the South Bay, and as far down as Hartnell. I had some part-time jobs, so I ran all over the place. Never got tenure, and pretty much stuck with my editorial career as a result. But my first, when I got out of school with a master's in linguistics, I was planning to be a community college writing instructor. So I'm somebody who loves the written word and enjoys working on it, and that's why I'm writing this, this summary of the book, because the book is very, I would say, scholarly. It's very dense. It's extremely well documented. It's got huge numbers of footnotes. Everything he claims beyond his own opinions have to do with are documented. The sources are given. So let's be sure to
continue. Please.
A little technical problem here. So I decided to write this summary. I've been working on it for a while. It's not easy, and also I'm kind of a busy person. But I wanted to talk about Zionism and what it is. I think people have kind of a, well, many people have a great idea, good idea of what it is, others not so much. It's a term that, as far as my research shows, first appeared in about 1896, and it refers to the essentially, very simply, as a movement to establish a national Jewish community in Palestine. Now, of course, there's more than a Jewish community there. There's a Jewish state, and it happened at the expense of the Palestinians. I would say, certainly, about Zionism, there's certainly nothing wrong with a nonviolent movement that would seek to establish a community that would peacefully coexist with the indigenous inhabitants. But as Pape points out in this book, there was an expulsion
that
occurred.
Okay.
In approximately a period of 6 months.
That's okay. I have a hard time in the studio.
1948. So when I use the term Zionist, there are a wide range. Really, there. I would say just like any group. Let's not put people into attach a label to people. So. We have many different kinds of Americans. When I say that, I mean people who have different attitudes and thought processes and all of that. We have many different kinds of people of any group, black, white, gay, straight, all nationalities. No group is all is full of all wonderful altruistic people, and no group is full of criminals and crooks and thugs. So let's be sure when we use the term Zionist that we make sure that we don't put people into some kind of category. So, for example, there were militant Zionists who took up arms against the Palestinians. There were other Zionists who perhaps had reservations about establishing an exclusively Jewish state in Palestine or anywhere. After all, if you compare this to, let's say, that this idea to the United States, where we've got a melting pot, we have freedom of religion, we don't have any state religion, you can certainly see that that this idea might have been resisted. And personally, I know a lot of people who agree that perhaps the idea of an exclusively Jewish state wasn't a great idea. It's a little late to go back on that now. But, you know, I can name Dennis Bernstein of KPFA, Amy Goodman of Pacifica, Norman Finkelstein, the renowned author, Rabbi Michael Lerner. Lerner, I think, is more of a Zionist. Mark Ellis, a professor, an author. So there's a wide range of thought, and so that's why I wanted to mention avoiding the stereotyping. There were Jewish colonizers who did arrive in Palestine in the 1880s. I believe the first group, 1882. By 1918, the Zionist population of the country was about 5%. So when I say Zionist, again, these were Jewish people who had emigrated to this area. At this time in 1918, there was among the emigrants, I don't think there was, you know, necessarily among the majority of them an idea that they would have a state, although there were Palestinians early, there were Israel, Zionists early on, who did talk about expulsion. In 1897, Nachman Sirkin, that's Nahmansyrkin, he called for the expulsion of the indigenous population. Now, this is 1897, that's pretty early on. 1917, Zionist leader Leo Motzkin advocated the resettlement, as he called it, of the Palestinians outside of historic Palestine and the colonization of the entire area. There's a term that called Eretz Israel, which refers to the entire area. So early on, you know, there were people who, there were Zionists who did talk about resettlement. And I must say from Papé's book that the systematic planning did start, got off the ground in 1901 with the establishment of the Jewish National Fund, which was, whose goal was to basically buy land. That was certainly their main objective, and land for the colonists from other areas. One of the important things that occurred early on was the establishment of the Zionist leadership at the time called the Village Files. And now here, we're talking about 1920s. So when I say that there was a systematic planning for the expulsion of the Palestinians, which didn't occur until 1948, mostly. Of course, it's still going on in a sense, but in another sense, in another way, but or in other ways. But the Village Files were specifically to record the topography of each village for future expulsion purposes. They also tried to assess the, quote, as Papé calls them, Hebraic origins of each village. That is, they wanted to make sure that they knew, you know, how many Jewish people were there, and perhaps even if there weren't any at this, in the 1920s and beyond, that they knew what the Jewish history of a village was early, if any. Not that there necessarily would have been in every single village, because there were many villages, hundreds. They wanted to determine the age of each village, and I think the most important thing about the Village Files, and this was later on, this wasn't in the 1920s, but in 1936, the Palestinians rose up against the British. We should probably talk about the British mandate and all of that. I'll talk about that in a second. But the Village Files evolved, starting in the 1920s, going into the 30s, and by 1936, there was a Palestinian uprising against the British. A little background on that, the Ottoman Empire, which began in 1300, as you might know, it was basically a Turkish empire, and it was it folded up at the end of World War I. So by 1917, the British came in and reoccupied all of historic Palestine, and so by 1936, there's a lot that went on before that. There were other uprisings and such, but the significant point for the ethnic cleansing is the 1936 uprising and the brutal putting down of this uprising, and really significantly, the British disarmed the Palestinians. That you cannot overemphasize what this meant for what happened in 1948. So the British, let's talk about the British a little bit. You have British Foreign Secretary Arthur James Balfour, who said at one point that Great Britain would support the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and he went on to say it should be understood that nothing will be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of the existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. I think this is that's a good thing that he said that. However, when you think about it, the Palestinians in the 1920s comprised between 80% and 90% of the total population. So to refer to the Palestinians as non-Jewish communities is a bit of a slap in the face of the Palestinians. It shows, I think, the prejudice of the British already, probably because of lobbying, what we would call lobbying now. So, by the 1920s, you already see this attitude. The British kind of looking at the Palestinians as if, instead of comprising 80 to 90% of the population, that they only comprised half of it, that the Zionists had already, managed to populate, and that's not the case. I mean, it was, the Zionist colonization was very, very slow. I would say, yes, the Zionist lobby worked behind the scenes, and the British were, I think, in the 1920s, probably much more even-handed, or were much more even-handed in their approach. But by 1936 and the dismantling of the paramilitary forces of the Palestinians, which had fought the occupier. So, let's put this in perspective. Here we've got Palestinians in their own homeland fighting occupiers. And I believe in international law, occupation is people who are being occupied have a right to resist, just as the Iraqis had a right to resist the American invasion. So, in any case, we've got to look at this, as an occupation. And I won't go into the idea of occupation, but I think, in general, I mean, to me, there are almost no good occupations in history.
Robert,
generally, they become they become brutal. Yes.
Yeah. Now, let me just interject here. It is now 4:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live on freakradio.org. If anyone's listening to it, it's, well, it's hard to say how many on the internet are listening, and virtually impossible to tell who is listening to the broadcast signal, but we are live. This is Mideast Madness with Renzo Wheel and our guest today, guest speaker Robert. Originally from Southern California, correct?
Yeah, but this is my home. I've been here 36 years this month, actually. So I've lived here longer than any other.
You beat place. Me by one year vis-a-vis my stay in Minnesota. I was in Minnesota basically for 35 years. But that's neither here nor there. Let me repeat the phone numbers. We're here in area code 831-427-3772. 427-3772 or 831-469-3119. 469-3119. The lines are now open. Going to open them up a little early in case people, you know, I don't want people to completely fall out of the mood to call in. Please call us for any reason. And we have what appears to be our first ever call to the show. Let me see if I can do this right. You're on the air. Hello? Sorry, folks. There was only a single ring that time, so I don't know if that's someone who had last moment change of mind or were being harassed. But let's continue, Robert.
Well, Cal, this story is I would say I'm not so sure it's super complicated, but it is detailed. So the British, let me see if I can kind of wrap up this. We can't really underestimate the role of the British here, but see if I can move ahead along and see if I can summarize this without being, too mired in detail. But the 1937, the British Royal Peel Commission, P-E-E-L, I've got to think about who he was, probably a foreign minister of some kind. This was 1937, talking about dividing Palestine into two states. The Zionist leadership in public statements accepted the plan, but in which would have put a modest Palestinian, Jewish state and a modest Palestinian and a larger Palestinian state together in historic Palestine. The Zionist leadership, again, not all Zionists, but the Zionist leadership plotted in secret, which was part of their mindset. They wanted to forcibly take this land and transfer the people. They called it transferring the population. So just think of somebody saying to you, well, I'm going to transfer you out of your home. What does that mean? What if I resist? Well, I'm going to come in and knock down your house and get rid of you. So that's really what it is. It can't be put in any different terms. So transfer is really a euphemism for expulsion. I guess I should mention now we talked about it earlier, but the Haganah, which was the main Zionist military organization, A-G-A-N-A, H-A-G-A-N-A. Long story short, the British forces, not even with regard to the British government, but there were officers in the British military, the occupiers of Palestine at that point, this is in the 30s, the 1930s, they actually coordinated their efforts with the Haganah. And again, the Haganah became the, in May of 1948, immediately became the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. And actually, when they put down the Palestinian revolt of 36 and then disarmed the Palestinians, it was with the help of the British. Let's just put it that way. I mean, there's a lot of detail here, but and it's in the book, in Papé's book. We could move on back to the Jewish, the JNF, the Jewish National Fund. They had a settlement department. There was a gentleman named Yosef Weitz, I think I've mentioned his name before, who in 1940 had two entries in his diary that Papé uncovered. The Arabs should go, and it is our right to transfer the Arabs. So they're continuing to talk about this. And so again, this mindset has developed now for over a period of more than two decades at this point. So Weitz, or Weitz in German, W-E-I-T-Z, he was in charge of contacting landowners. So when land was sold, he would contact the landowners and try to get the Palestinian, I would call them sharecroppers or tenant farmers, evacuated or expelled. In other words, get them out, get rid of them, and then that way we can bring some Zionist settlers in. So anyway, that's what was going on. As I mentioned earlier, the Village Files by the late 30s showed that most of these Palestinian villages were defenseless. They were built next to the agricultural land. So the Palestinians did not build on the hills; they built in the valleys. Because they lived off the land. Now there were urban Palestinians as well, but these people lived off the land, there were no defenses. The Ottoman Empire, which at its end was about 600 years old, there was relative stability. It was fairly peaceful, really, in Palestine for centuries. And the Palestinians, I believe, and Papé talks about this, were actually fairly docile. Certainly they had their militants, but they had this uprising against the occupying British. But militants are always a very small percentage of the population anyway. These villages were defenseless, and again, the colonization was very slow in occurring. And by 1947, fast forwarding a little bit, but I just wanted to make sure that people realize that the Zionists owned less than 6% of the land in Palestine by 1947. So you can see the colonization wasn't going very well. Looks like Ren might have something to say.
Robert, I'm just looking over your notes here. I'm looking at your notes. We've only got about 15 minutes left in the program. Do you want to put on hold the rest of your summary and talk about some of the other things you've noted in your paragraphs here? Because I need to take the last 5 minutes to talk to do a couple of readings myself.
Okay, sure. I wanted to let me just go through a couple of little highlights here. there was basically no Palestinian leadership by the 40s. Now we're fast forwarding. We're into the 1940s. The Palestinian leadership basically collapsed. A lot of them were absentee. A lot of the wealthier Palestinians didn't even live there, and even though they owned land. So there was definitely a power vacuum. In terms of armaments, as I said, the Palestinians were disarmed by the British. So there were no militias, or almost none. I'm sure there were some weapons, but very, very few. In 1948, the Israeli Communist Party received a huge shipment of arms from the Soviet Union. And, of course, the British refused to let Palestinians rearm after that. So, you know, the Palestinians were really outgunned. And
I remember reading some time ago that most of the long rifles that were available to the Palestinians in 1948, the defenders of Jerusalem in particular, were rifles that were literally manufactured before 1900. They were manufactured in the late 19th century and were used by the Wahhabis. And that's, that comprised apparently the bulk of the long rifles that the Arabs were using.
Well, I mean, that's you know, it's basically true today. You know, you've got Israeli teenagers throwing rocks and sticks at you know, the Israeli army, which has by far the most weapons per capita of any place on earth. It's one of the largest militaries in the world, probably fifth, I think. So again, I just let me go back to what happened in 1948. There's a lot more to this, but according to Ilan Pappé's book, more than half of the native population of Palestine, these were people who had been there, whose ancestors had been there for centuries, 800,000 people, or almost 800,000, he says, were uprooted, 531 villages destroyed, and 11 urban areas emptied of inhabitants. And believe me, there was what we would call terrorism here, because in the urban areas, in one place, Pape writes that the Zionist militia would bring in a car full of explosives to a Palestinian repair shop in an urban area and detonate it and kill lots of people. This is a terrorist act. There's no other way to put it. And in the villages, what was typical was that the Zionist militia would come in and, based on the village files, take a few of the men aside. Say you are resistors, or you're resisting this takeover. They would just execute them, shoot five men, just execute them, throw them in a, dig a hole, throw them in a mass grave, and say to the rest of the population of the village, well, this could happen to you if you don't leave. And that's primarily how these 500 plus villages were evacuated. And if that's not terrorism, I don't know what is.
Thanks, Robert. Let me break in again here. I do apologize to whoever tried to call in. Obviously, something went wrong, and here you've heard me in recent weeks begging people, beseeching people to call in, and someone attempts to, and something went wrong. I may have pushed the wrong button, or something else might have happened. So please don't be discouraged. Forgive me for not being able to take your call. Call into our phones here, 427-3772 or 469-3119. Hopefully we'll get it right if anyone calls in again. It is 4:45 Pacific Daylight Time, and stay tuned. In 10 minutes, the International Middle East Media Consortium, that's not what the C stands for, but Center, Media Center, will have their daily Palestine Today 5-minute segment, roughly 5-minute segment at 4:55. It's now 4:45. And Robert, what else do you have for us?
Oh, I thought we were done. Well, I highly recommend the book. Again, it's The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. The author is Ilan Pape, P-A-P-P-E.
Where is he currently living?
Oh, I mentioned that at the beginning. He's a professor of history. This is a historical book. It's a history book, a well-documented, thoroughly researched history book. He was ostracized after the book was published. His institution, the University of Tel Aviv, didn't like this book. The truth hurts sometimes. He was ostracized. I don't know under what circumstances he actually moved, but he obviously felt that he couldn't live in Israel anymore, perhaps even for his own safety. And he is a professor at the University of Exeter, which has various campuses throughout Great Britain, and he's in the Cornwall campus, which is in Wales, in the western part of England. I believe he has a website. I think if you just Google Ilan Pape, P-A-P-P-E, first name I-L-A-N, you could certainly, it'll show up.
It's not hard to do at all. Robert, when you speak of the, as you're speaking of the various misdeeds and hostile acts that the Zionists carried out, it always brings to mind something mentioned in the Balfour Declaration, which I read to you a couple of weeks ago on this show. Scottish statesman Arthur Balfour, who was prime minister became prime minister of Great Britain in 1902, and also represented Britain in the first assembly of the League of Nations, which was the predecessor to the United Nations following World War I. He basically was behind the famous Balfour Declaration of 1917, November 2nd, 1917, which was in the form of a letter to a Lord Rothschild. And as I'd mentioned in my previous reading, the Balfour Declaration pretty much amounted to a way of paying back to the moneyed Jewish corporate leaders who helped Great Britain and the Allies win World War I. Many of these Jewish benefactors to the cause also were Zionists, and as a way of paying them back, it's been strongly suggested that that's pretty much what the Balfour Declaration was, a payback. Let me just read you the Balfour Declaration. It's just basically a single paragraph. His Majesty's government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object. And here's the thing that my mind keeps coming back to when I hear Robert's rendition of Ian Pape's book. It continues to say in the Balfour Declaration, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done, which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. In other words, that's basically the bulk of the Balfour Declaration. But that last clause, last two clauses that I read to you indicated that it was recognized that it was necessary to guarantee the rights and the security of all peoples of Palestine, including the natives, whether they were non-Jewish, Muslim, Christian, or whatever, or native Jewish Palestinians. It was recognized that that they all had rights, and that these hostile acts of the early Zionist militants ran entirely counter to the security of native Palestinians.
So, how much more time do we have? A couple minutes?
I think you should wrap it up. Okay. It goes by real fast.
It does. Again, I highly recommend this book. I think it's important because we need fairness and we need justice. The Palestinians have lived for too long with certainly the mainstream media in the United States, and I can't speak for Europe. I think Europeans are a little better informed on this issue. But the mainstream media in the United States simply does not acknowledge the plight of the Palestinians, does not acknowledge the history. You never hear about what really happened, and if you want to know about what happened in 1948, please avail yourself of this book.
People in the United States virtually never find out through the common media, the predominant media sources, the more distant history going back before 1948 of what led to this. The media does more or less cover the fact that life is difficult for Palestinians and that they hunger for a free state of their own. They almost always include the fact or the notion that some Palestinians want to destroy Israel or they want to continue their militancy. And you've got situations in this country where if Bob Simon on CBS's 60 Minutes does a responsible, eye-opening report on the antics of the Israeli Defense Forces in the West Bank, a short segment for 60 Minutes, which is still pretty in-depth, some American Jews and the Israeli lobby just raise all kinds of hell, and they have accused CBS of a hatchet job on Israel, those exact words, and they've made things difficult for CBS and for 60 Minutes. That was over a year ago, that report, and then I believe the same man, Bob Simon, put another report out a few weeks ago on the situation with Christian Palestinians and the real reasons why so many of them have been leaving, and how it has more to do, not so much to do with repression from native Muslims, but it has a lot to do with their inability to live normal lives under Israeli occupation. And again, the Israeli lobby goes running out and yelling foul, another hatchet job on Israel, simply because this reasonable report came on television and gave Americans a viewpoint, presented to Americans a viewpoint they don't normally get.
Well, that's why this, that's why a book like this is never acknowledged in the mainstream press. I mean, you wouldn't want to hold your breath searching for a review of this book in the mainstream press, and I've never seen it. Now, it does exist, but if people don't know about it, then you know, it might as well not exist. However, it does exist. I think the more people
30 seconds
understand what's going on, the more we have a chance to find real justice for the Palestinians, and that's necessary to resolve this 65-year-old conflict.
Robert, thank you so much. I know that you put a lot of work into that summation of the book, and I hope people got something positive out of Robert's comments here today. I'm hoping to have more guests in the near future on Mideast Madness every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Again, my apologies to whoever tried to call in. I don't know exactly what went wrong, but we did get a single ring from the phone. Next week, we're going to talk about Israeli Jewish settler violence against Palestinians and a little bit about Mitt Romney. please send in your contributions to FRSC PO Box 7811, Santa Cruz 95061. Stay tuned for Palestine Today. Thank you so much.
Between the Eros instinct, the impulse within us that propels us to become close to others, to preserve and conserve, and the Thanatos, or death instinct, the impulse that works towards the annihilation of all living things, including ourselves. For Freud, these forces were in eternal conflict. He was pessimistic about ever eradicating war. All human history, he argued in Civilization and its Discontents, is a tug of war between these two.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org.